This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
16th to go, an American Pharoah and firing line, and it's American Pharoah pulling away late. American Pharoah rules the Derby!
Run Happy just keeps coming at him past the 16th pole. Run Happy, and boy, does this horse love to run. The aptly named Run Happy for Edgar Prado to take it.
Also sponsored by Abracadabra Farm, Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, VetAmerica.com, Brisnet.com, Cal Density, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, FarmPaint.com, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainsway, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Washington Hay, and Woodbine Entertainment.
But there's no catching Wedding Toast. Wedding Toast, much the best here, all the way in the Beldame.
There will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Pope Jude, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four. We are with you again in our Lexington, Kentucky studios after a trip down south to Gulfstream Park last weekend. We'll be back there again in just 2 weeks from today, February 6th, for the beginning of our Saturdays at Gulfstream broadcast series that begins on February 6th with our coverage of the Don Handicap. And all of this means that we are just 105 days, 5 hours, 31 minutes, and 43 seconds away from the Run for the Roses.
It's getting closer by the minute.
By the second.
Yes. Well, that too. Or the nanosecond, yeah, Sheldon.
Well, next week when we open the show, we will be under 100 days to the Derby. Think about that.
Wow. Really getting closer.
Yeah. Once that, and Derby fever for a lot of people is at a fever pitch. There's no doubt about it.
Yes. I got a new sport jacket and everything.
You did?
Yes.
Just for Kentucky Derby?
Well, that's about the only time I wear one.
You've already picked out your attire for
the
Derby?
Well, I know exactly. I wear the same thing for the Derby every year, basically.
Is it a superstition?
Not really, but it's become a tradition. I have a necktie that Kim Davis Pedroza Wickman gave me many, many years ago when she was riding for Wayne Lucas, when she was Kim Davis. And,
yeah.
And she came to Churchill Downs to ride some horses for Wayne. And I think she did pretty good. She won like 13 during the meet or something. And she brought me a necktie back that's like a hand-painted Derby tie with the twin spires. It's really nice. I always get compliments on it. So
yeah,
I wear that.
Tie. I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. Every year at the Derby.
Right.
So I wear that every year. I also wear a pair of cufflinks that my mother gave to my father as an engagement present. They're a horse head in a kind of a triangle. They're very cool, and they're very old. They're older than me. So those are the two things that I always wear for Kentucky Derby Day.
Yeah. I don't have anything special like that for Derby Day.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I still have all of my wacky theories about, lucky pocket theory with my tickets and putting them in the right ticket, and lucky pen theory. If I can find a lucky pen between now and then, it's going to be the same pen I'm using at Derby Day.
I'll give you a Pope Jude pen. It'll be really lucky.
There you go.
I can't keep enough of those at Gulfstream. People come by the table and they just fly out of there.
They were flying off of our table last week. Matter of fact, you left some there after we did the morning show, and we went back to the hotel, changed, came back for the afternoon races. By the time we got back, there were no pens.
All gone. I left some complimentary sheets, and which we had a freaking killer day too.
Yeah, you smoked them last week.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But those pens don't stay. Last year I had like five or six left, and I left them for Ziggy the bartender over there, and he was so happy to get them because people walk off with his pens when they sign their checks.
How great was Ziggy last week? Our thanks to Ziggy for taking care of us. We set up, if you've never been to Gulfstream or if you're going to be coming, when we start Saturdays at Gulfstream on February 6th, we'll be right outside of the Joker's Wild Bar, which is on the second level balcony overlooking the walking ring. And Ziggy is the regular bartender there. And he was such a big help to us. Every day we showed up, he had a fresh tablecloth waiting for us. He got all of our chairs together for us. Just can't say enough good things about him and Nancy Berry for all of her help. Really good people down there.
Yeah, they do a great job. And yeah, Ziggy's gone above and beyond the call of duty. He's really helped us out many times, including letting us do the show at the bar one day, which was kind of entertaining.
Talk about the fox in the hen house.
I wouldn't mind doing that all the time. But
that was a good setup.
Yeah, it was a pretty good setup. But yeah, they do treat us very nicely at Gulfstream, and looking forward to being down there for 9 weeks. That's going to be cool.
Well, and in case you're wondering, we have edged just a bit closer to the Kentucky Derby now. 105 days, 5 hours, 28 minutes, and 2 seconds.
All right. Well.
So, and because of that, we're going to spend some time talking about some players along that road to Louisville in the first Saturday in May. And it starts with Tom Amos, who is going to be with us right around 8:30 Eastern time, maybe just a few minutes after that this morning. Tom, of course, sent out Mo Tom to win the LeComp Stakes at Fairgrounds last weekend. And Jude, that's a horse that I know you've had your eye on for a while. You think he can run?
Yeah, he's really nice and very professional in his last race. You know, Tom always seems to have a horse or two getting ready on the, you know, they look like they're going to be on the Derby trail and stuff. And usually they're just not quite good enough. You know, they're just maybe a cut below, but this horse I think might be, you know, right in there. He's in the mix with the best of the horses, I think, at least at this juncture. So I'm anxious to see if old Tom can, you know, get it done this time, because he's always like around the fringes, but usually it's not Tom's fault that they don't get there. They're just usually a cut below, but I think this horse is a cut above.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I called Tom to ask him to join us here on the program, I told him, I said, Tom, that the horse ran great. He really looks like he has some ability. And he said, yes. He said, but remember, it's only January.
Yeah.
So for those of you that have Derby fever, you might want to cool it just a little bit at this point.
Yeah, well, says the guy who announces every 5 minutes how many days, seconds, and hours to the Derby. Yeah, I mean, but Derby time's always exciting. And you know what I like is watching the development of the horses. Of course, you know, having trained horses and stuff, I'm into that. But I like you know, maybe finding a horse that isn't on everybody's radar, and you know, watch them improve, or sometimes they go the other way. But it's been fun. I mean, I've got 60 horses now on a list, you know, for us for when we do the Churchill Downs Press Box Fantasy Triple Crown League, you know, a lot of those horses are, you know, very fringy at this point, but you never know who's going to develop. And these horses, they change overnight, you know, the young three-year-olds.
Yeah, and then we saw Discreetness jump up and win the Smarty Jones Stakes at Oaklawn on Monday. That was Martin Luther King Day, special Monday of racing. John Court was aboard for his father-in-law, Jinx Fires, and John is going to join us right around 9 o'clock Eastern time to tell us about Discreetness and how he feels this horse might mature and develop as he moves down the road to Louisville.
Yeah, it was a nice win, and over a pretty decent field. So he's another horse that we have our eye on, and we'll see how he develops down the road.
We'll also talk some handicapping with Jonathan Kinchin, who is the winner of the NHC Tour this year. He will be on his way to Vegas to compete in the National Handicapping Championship at Treasure Island. Jonathan has only been competing in contests for a couple of years, and here he is winning the NHC Tour. So looking forward to that visit right around 9:30 Eastern time. And we're going to kick it off with Bernie Sams, who is the man taking care of all the stallions and pretty much running the show at Claiborne here in Paris, Kentucky. So looking forward to visiting with Bernie. He's going to tell us all about those Claiborne stallions, because they are simply remarkable. And some sad news coming out this week we'll touch on. That was the passing of their longtime stallion, Arch, at the age of 21.
Yeah, that's...
Boy, what a good horse.
Yeah, he was a very good horse, a good sire, 11 Grade 1 Stakes winners, and, of course, the sire of Breeders' Cup Classic winner, Blaine.
Yeah. All right, we'll go ahead and kick it off with Bernie in just a minute. But before we get to that break, I want to throw out our poll question for this morning. You can tweet to us at HRRN. And you can also hit us up on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And we want to know which three-year-old you have your eye on for the Derby Trail. Which three-year-old? Pick one. Send it to us at HRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. We'll try to get through some of those later in the program. We'll see if we can do that. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End.
Adina Spring Stallion Point of Entry, a five-time Grade 1 winner viewed by many to be the heir to Dyna Former's global legacy, with first crop weanlings already realizing six-figure sums at both Keeneland and Tattersall's in Newmarket. As a racehorse, Point of Entry was a truly great American turf horse, becoming the first since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by four lengths. A Hall of Fame ride it was. Point of Entry wins the Sword Dancer, and they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a five-race winning streak.
Point of Entry returned the following year to win the Grade 1 Gulfstream Park Turf and Grade 1 Manhattan, and also displayed the ability and the pedigree to perform at the highest level on dirt. Point of Entry, standing at Adina Springs in Paris, Kentucky. Visit adinastallions.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March Chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
A multiple graded stakes winner and earner of more than $1 million. AlterNation reeled off four consecutive stakes victories.
AlterNation, just far too much class for this field.
AlterNation running a powerful race here.
Cannot match stride with AlterNation.
And it's a photo AlterNation.
Great breeding from a family of successful sires, grand appearance, and brilliance on the racetrack. AlterNation at Pin Oak Stud.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet is in full stride this Saturday, with an 11-race program highlighted by a field of nine in the $100,000 H. Allen Jerkin Stakes, contested at 2 miles on the turf. And be sure to mark your calendar for Gulfstream's exciting handicapping contest in February and March. On February 20th, the ladies-only Girls Got Game contest is back by popular demand. And on March 19th and 20th, you can compete in the Live Money Ultimate Betting Challenge. Visit GulfstreamPark.com to learn more. Are you a believer?
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
Justin Phillip retired sound following 32 lifetime starts, 23 of those coming in graded stakes, with nine buyer speed figures of 100 or better, by the exciting young sire First Samurai and a half-brother to three other graded stakes winners, including Algorithms, Seeing is Believing, with Justin Phillip at Castleton Lions. Are you a believer? Hashtag Justin's Believers.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy John's.
Less than a quarter of a mile to go now in the Smarty Jones Stakes, and Taves on Ice comes under pressure. It's Gordy Florida and Glenn Corbett who come away with the lead. To the outside, Discreetness is on the attack second. Luna DeLoco guides through on the inside. Inside the final furlong of the Smarty Jones, Gordy Florida tough down the inside, and on the outside, it's Discreetness. Discreetness and Gordy Florida. Discreetness is in front. Gordy Florida battles on. Discreetness wins. Discreetness for John Cord and Jinx Fires win the Smarty Jones in 138 flat.
Discreetness taking the Smarty Jones this past Monday. He was ridden by jockey John Court, who will be with us here on the Equine Forum right around 9 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Stay tuned for that one. Looking forward to hearing from John and hearing his thoughts on Discreetness and how he may develop as he moves down that road to the Kentucky Derby. He's certainly on the trail with that gutsy win in the Smarty Jones.
Yeah, it was a good performance. And, of course, his father-in-law, Jinx Fires, trains the horse, so I'm sure John has gotten on him for a while and should know him inside and out. So be interesting to hear the insights from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Yeah, if you are just joining us, don't forget that the trainer of Mo Tom, winner of the LeCompte Stakes, Tom Amos, is going to be with us right around 8:35 Eastern time. And Jonathan Kinchin will be with us in the second half of the program. Of course, the winner of the NHC Tour this year, he'll be with us at 9:30 Eastern time. And Bernie Sams from Claiborne are going to be with us here shortly. We are efforting Bernie. We'll have him on the program, and we'll talk about all those outstanding stallions at Claiborne.
Yeah. No, they got a great roster. It's a fantastic farm, very historic farm, a home of many great stallions over the years. And looking forward to hearing what Bernie has to say.
You know, I went out to visit with Bernie and with Walker Hancock a couple of months ago. And when you pull into Claiborne, you can just feel the history that's there and the tradition. It's almost like the ghosts of racing past. There's something about it, and I'm trying to describe it and put it into words. I don't know if you really can. You have to experience it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic experience to go there. And every time I go to Claiborne, I just think about Secretariat.
Because
the first time I went to Claiborne, Secretariat was standing at stud there, and he was under a tree, and he saw Alan Buchdahl and I. Alan was the race caller at Santa Anita for a while and was calling the races at River Downs, and Secretariat saw us, and he came running. And it was one of the most beautiful things, and it's etched in my memory. And just, you know, bending over, picking up some grass and feeding it to Secretariat, it was a really special moment for me, and I'll never forget it.
Yeah, it's a special place. And if you do make it to the Bluegrass, that is one place you need to put on your bucket list and stop out to Paris and see Claiborne Farm and see all the great folks there, because it is truly an unbelievable experience. And Bernie Sams is with Claiborne, and he's with us now here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bernie, good morning, my friend. Thanks for taking a little time.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Good, good. You got a great voice for radio.
You know what? I got stopped up.
Oh.
That's even better.
What's going on? When are you coming out to see us then again, if you know?
Maybe we should do a show from there some morning.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That would be fun.
Set you up in the conference room, you'd be ready.
There you go.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take you up on that.
Until it gets a little warmer, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, whenever you say, when it's convenient for you. But that'd be fun to do an equine forum from Claiborne Farm.
Yeah.
We can figure it out.
Well, Bernie, we begin on a bit of a somber note this morning, because the news coming out this past week that Arch, at the age of 21, has passed away. And I know that so many farms take so much pride in their stallions, but here's a guy that's been so good to you for so long. And this has to be a difficult week.
No, you know what? It is. But he was good to everybody that was ever in contact with him, from his racing days to being here at the farm, the progeny, the offspring, the sales, the people that bought him to race, the people that have mares by him. You know, so his legacy will continue and continue well. That's fairly ironic that, you know, last week during the sale, or the week before, you know, he had such a good sale, and, you know, this week's Blood Horse ad was for Arch. So it's unfortunate, but he had a good life.
Yeah, and he's got a good representation with Arch, who has really taken off early on in his career.
Yeah, you've got Arch. We've got Blame. You know, he's been a really good horse. Really good horse for a lot of people on a lot of fronts.
Yeah, he certainly has been, and he will be missed, no doubt about it. But, Bernie,
absolutely.
the cabinet certainly not empty at Claiborne when you think about the stallions that you do have there. Let's talk about some of them, and who can we look forward to seeing here in 2016 for this upcoming breeding season?
Well, you know, from what I gather, you know, at the sale, January sale, you know, I had a number of people come up to me and they were talking about the algorithms that they've seen or have or whatnot that are in Florida getting ready to either race for their racing stables or getting ready to go to the two-year-old sales, which is very encouraging. I mean, he himself was a good racehorse and, you know, made three starts and three wins and's bred, you know, a couple good books of mares. He wasn't quite as popular last year, but I think people just kind of sitting back waiting to see. But I think after listening to people last week around the sale, I sent out quite a few contracts, so that was very encouraging.
Well, that's a horse that now that he's going to have runners, people can start taking a shot. I mean, you know, it's buy on the rumor, sell on the news, and it sounds like it's going to be a good season for him. He should get a lot of mares.
No, I hope so. There was a nice filly that was in the sale that Bruce Gibbs sold, brought $85,000. So, you know, there were a lot of people made comment about that one, and he's had several of them sell well. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. You know, as we all know, if a couple of them breeze well, they'll sell well. So,
yeah, what's he stand for, Bernie?
He's $5,000.
Wow.
So he's a bargain.
Yeah, very much value priced. He's a son of Bernardini out of Ava Knows the Code, and here's a horse that could really run. So why not? I mean, if he passes along those same traits to his babies, I think that people would be getting in on the ground floor with a horse like Algorithms.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, that mare, Ava Knows the Code. She's been good to anybody who's been around her as well. She's
had
Justin Phillips. She's got the horse Greenpoint Crusader this year, who looks like a nice three-year-old for him. So we'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
How about my man Blame? How's he doing?
Your man Blame, he's doing great. he was booked up by Thanksgiving. It was nice to see. Nice to see.
Yeah, that's great. In Kentucky, people make their plans early. Some of the other states, you know, the minute the foal drops, and they start thinking about maybe booking to a stallion. But here, you gotta get on the wagon early.
That's right. I mean, the more popular horses fill up early, and he had a great year last year with two-year-olds. I think he was one short of having twice as many two-year-old winners last year as he did his first year, so that was encouraging. And he's got a number of runners out there, so we've got high expectations for him this year.
Who booked up quicker, Blame or Warfront?
Next question.
Proprietary information.
Well, I'm saying.
You knew the answer before you asked.
I did.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. You know, you look at those two stallions, and you talk about a couple of stallions to build your roster around. You couldn't do any better than those two, Bernie.
No, I tell you what, with Blame and Warfront, I mean, you know, Flatter himself. I mean, here's another horse. He came from the 5,000 ranks to work his way up to 30,000, and I mean, he booked up. He might have booked up a little bit quicker than Blame, only because I don't have as many to sell in him, and he'll breed about 95 mares.
So how many Kittens Joy seasons did you get for Flatter seasons? I saw Mr. Ramsey had some Flatters on his list of two-year-olds that they're running the naming contest over there at Ramsey Farm, and there were some Flatters. And I said, I wonder if there was any deal going
on
here.
You know what? We never did trade. I know we bred to Kittens Joy, and they bred to Flatter. Uh-huh. I think we just exchanged contracts.
Because everybody makes a big deal out of the five Uncle Mo's for one Kittens Joy.
That wasn't what it was it?
I think so.
Wow. He did well there.
He sure did.
Bernie Sam's from
Claiborne. Really well, that Uncle Mo, he looks like he's the real deal for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Bernie Sam's from Claiborne Farm joining us on the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bernie, you just mentioned maybe not having as many shares to sell in Flatter as you did with Blame. How is that determined? Tell me about that process.
Well, I think what I meant was the seasons. Flatter's a syndicated horse.
Correct.
And they're shareholders. So there's 20 shareholders, and there's some bonus seasons there. So I wouldn't have quite as many contracts to send out, where Blame himself is a partnership horse with Adele Dillsnyder, who raced the horse with Claiborne Farm. And you know, if he breeds 100 mares, I've got roughly 80 contracts to send because the other 20 will be farm mares will go to him, or there'll be 90 contracts and 10 mares that live here will go to him that belong to Claiborne, Miss Dill Snyder, and Claiborne Farm itself. So that's the difference in the two. One's syndicated, one's not.
Yeah, well, that's always a tough thing to do when you have, you know, 90 seasons if you don't have a horse like Blame, you know, to fill them up. But that's the luxury of having a Breeders' Cup Classic winner that's bred yeah. out the kazoo.
No, I guess I say it certainly helps if they're popular and the offspring look good, or even when they come in, you know, if you price them right and you own the whole thing or you own them in partnership, you know, it allows you to pick and choose through the mares and decide which ones you want and which ones might not work for you.
Bernie, how about Lee and Orb? Tell me about them.
Orb's done very well. Orb would be pretty close to being done. He'll breed 120 mares again this year and been very popular because, the offspring sold well and people have liked what they've had, the ones that, you know, didn't sell them. We've got several here, and he had a great November and he had a good January sale for the short yearling. So, you know, he's been very well received his third year and very popular.
It's such a good-looking horse.
And Lee's a first-year horse, and he's been very well received. He's 12.5, and he was a very genuine racehorse himself. Every time he ran, he tried. He gave you everything he had, and it didn't matter where he was, on what surface, in what country, for that matter.
Well, Lee is the son of your stallion, First Samurai, and First Samurai has had success, so I think that has to help when you bring a horse in as a first-year stallion like that, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. First Samurai's done well. He kind of went through a little dip when there wasn't much going on, but then he came with that filly executive privilege, and that kind of picked everybody's head back up, and he's been breeding right at 100 and 120 mares each year since then. And I think as the books increase for him, you'll see more runners and popularity continue for him. I mean, he's got a short crop of three-year-olds this year, but a bigger crop of two-year-olds, obviously, to follow in behind. But, you know, saying that, he's got a short crop of three-year-olds, but there's some runners in that group. There was one that was second in the stake down at Oaklawn last week, Friday, I believe, opening day. So, you know, they're out there and they run and they're sound, and it doesn't matter whether it's colts or fillies, dirt or turf.
Yeah, versatility is so important, too, especially in today's day and age where there's a lot more turf racing than there used to be.
No question.
Well, talking about standing sons of your own stallions, you have another one in Datalink that's a son of Warfront. How's Datalink doing?
He's done great. You know, I wish a few of the weanlings had really brought huge money, but they sold well. And, you know, I think, again, everybody likes what they've seen. They've got plenty of size to them. And he'll breed somewhere around 100, 110 mares this year, I would think. He's been popular again, and I think it's probably a lot of his is he looks like his father, and you know he's very similar to his father, and obviously the Warfront angle there, as well as some of the other sons of Warfront that stand around Central Kentucky, has made them popular.
What's the bottom side on him?
On Datalink?
Yeah.
He's out of a known fact mare called Database.
Yep.
Mr. Janney raced.
Wow.
Yep.
Bernie, I think I've asked you this before, but when you look at Claiborne and you look at the success and the longevity of the success that you've had, what's the key?
You know, I think it's probably what's the key? Quality mares. Quality stallions, good land to raise them on, good horsemanship, and the leadership of Seth.
Do you pinch yourself when you go to work there every day?
There's some mornings you pull in the front gate, and it's pretty special. For sure. Now, you know, snow days and when it's 13 below zero, you just try and get in here.
Just put on that big coat of yours and go on with it. But yeah, we talked about that before you came on the air with us about how unique it is, and you just get this feeling when you go in there. I mean, you can just feel the the ghosts of the great horses that have been raised there and have lived there and stood there. So it's a very unique piece of ground.
No, it's a very, very special place. You know, you pull in the front and it's not fancy, but it's, you know, you're somewhere special when you come through those front gates with the creek and the office. And you know, you don't think about some of the horses that were here until you walk through the cemeteries. And the one here by the office where, you know, Secretariat, Mr. Prospector, Reaver Ridge, our Buck Passer, Reviewer. You know, you kind of take it for granted until you walk through there. And then there's the other cemetery, Marchmont, where some of the mares, or where a lot of the mares are buried, and some of the stallions get buried. Now, that's where Arch will go and was buried up there this week. You forget about it. You ride through the fields and look at the mares. It's a pretty remarkable place when you think about the longevity and the success they've had over so many years.
Yeah, I just got goosebumps listening to you run through that litany of greats that are there at Claiborne. And, Bernie, it's a very special place, and you guys are doing an unbelievable job out there. The stallion roster, rock solid. The racing program is among the tops of any program that we see across the United States and anywhere in the world. And we'll encourage people to go to the website, claibornefarm.com, to learn more about the entire Claiborne program, the sales program, the stallions, the racing, second to none. And can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us, my friend.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Always fun.
Talk to you soon.
Stay warm.
Sam's, like all of our guests, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I love Bernie.
Bernie's great.
Isn't he the best?
He's one of the best guys you could ever meet.
And sharp as a tack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he knows his stuff. Otherwise, he wouldn't be working there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really cool. I remember we had a Claiborne, well, they call it, some people call it orange. I call it yellow, Embrace the Race cap one time. And I had stashed it waiting for him to come by our table somewhere. And I gave it to him. He put it right on. And I go, this one's been waiting for you, you know. He's very, very proud of working for Claiborne, and well, he should be.
Yeah, he should be. All right, it is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. And then we're back to visit with trainer Tom Amos, who saddled Mo Tom to win the LeCompte Stakes this past weekend. It's all next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
By Tale of Two Cities out of Cindy Lou, Cougar II was a Chilean-bred racehorse foaled in 1966. Tall and muscular, with a regal presence, Cougar had a long tail that touched the ground. His thrilling late-running style captured the hearts of fans everywhere he raced. He began his career in his native country, but was imported to the United States by Santa Anita's famed track announcer Joe Hernandez in 1970. Defeated in his first two U.S. starts, Cougar then won a race on the dirt, followed by one on the turf, catching the eye of future Hall of Fame trainer Charlie Whittingham. After much wheeling and dealing, he was finally purchased by Florsheim Shoes heiress Mary F. Jones for $125,000 and put in Whittingham's care. Cougar won his first stakes for his new connections at Del Mar, the 1970 Escondido Handicap. In 1971, he won the prestigious San Juan Capistrano Handicap at Santa Anita, defeating the great Fort Marcy, who he would defeat later again that year in the Ford Pinto Invitational Turf Handicap at Belmont Park. The following year, Cougar won the Century Handicap at Hollywood Park and the Carlton F. Burke and Oak Tree Invitational, both at Santa Anita. Those victories in the famous All Red Silks cemented him as the champion male turf horse, garnering him an Eclipse Award. Often ridden by the incomparable Bill Shoemaker, Cougar would customarily pause in the post parade at least a couple of times with his famous jockey and face towards the grandstand for a round of applause from his plethora of fans. 1973 saw Cougar finally win the historic Santa Anita Handicap after finishing second in that race the two previous years. He retired at the end of the season with over $1 million in earnings, making him the first foreign-bred horse to achieve that milestone in the United States. At stud, Cougar initially stood at Spendthrift Farm. He was later transferred to Stone Farm, where he sired his most famous offspring, Gato del Sol, who won the 1982 Kentucky Derby. During his stallion career, Cougar produced 24 stakes winners. In June of 1989, he died at the age of 23. Recognizing his talent and popularity, the Historic Review Committee of the National Museum of Racing's Hall of Fame selected Cougar II as a Hall of Fame inductee in 2006. A true legend of the turf, Del Mar Racetrack has renamed the Escondido Handicap the Cougar II Handicap in his honor.
And that is your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment for this morning, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty. We're back to visit with Tom Amos right after this.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus Store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus Store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus Store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus Store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Pin Oak Studs, Broken Vow, ranks among the top sires in North America every year. Runners by this outstanding son of Unbridled have earned nearly $54 million and won major stakes on all surfaces from coast to coast. Sought after in the sales ring and hard to catch on the track, Broken Vow consistently has success at the highest level. Broken Vow at Pin Oak Stud.
The fun never ends at Sam Houston Race Park. Saturday, January 30th, don't miss the richest race in Texas with the newly graded $400,000 Grade 3 Houston Ladies Classic. The Houston Racing Festival also features the $200,000 Grade 3 Connolly Turf Cup, Frontier Utilities Turf Sprint, and Space City Stakes with a low 12% takeout. Watch, wager, and win at Sam Houston Race Park. Platinum Partners Bud Light, Sam Houston Race Park. Buy your tickets at shrp.com today.
Declaration of War has taken it up and wins the clean.
Departing wins the Illinois Derby.
Walk of Arm has gone clear in the Coventry.
Warfront has sired graded stakes winners on every surface.
Jack Milton.
And grade one winners, both in the U.S. and abroad.
It's Air Force Blue who storms to the front. Air Force Blue will go on to win the Kingland Phoenix Stakes.
Making a global impact, Warfront continues the legacy of his sire, Danzig. Warfront at Claiborne Farm.
Cara Conti, from the immediate family of champion sire King Mambo, winner of the Group 1 Grand Criterium at 2, Cara Conti captured the sire-making French 2000 Guineas. A Breeders' Cup mile winner in 132 and 4/5, Cara Conti posted the highest turf buyer of the year.
Cara Conti with a rush on the outside goes by them. Cara Conti at O'Donnell. Cara Conti!
Cara Conti, standing at Gainesway.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what's going on in the insurance world?
Mike, one of the best policies we sell is a homeowner's policy. It provides property coverage for the home and contents and also personal legal liability protection against bodily injury or property damage caused by the insured. The homeowner's policy, however, is not a business policy and should not be relied upon for business activities.
Do some people think there is business coverage in the homeowner's policy?
Yes. Some horse owners, for example, think there is liability protection on their homeowner's policy against bodily injury or property damage caused by their racing or breeding stock. The horse owner should actually carry a separate equine owner's liability policy to protect against horse ownership exposures.
Thanks for clearing that up, Joe. For your equine, farm, personal, and business insurance, call Joe Brown Nicholson at Nicholson Insurance Agency, 859-224-7080, or visit nicholsoninsurance.com. You gotta know Joe. Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce Summer Front for the 2016 breeding season.
Summer Front and Joe Bravo have won.
A multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by the Great War Front, Summer Front began his career as an undefeated multiple stakes winner at 2 before going on to win graded stakes at 3, 4, and 5. Boasting a top-class pedigree and the jaw-dropping looks that made him a $475,000 sales horse. The explosiveness, the looks, and the pedigree to be a truly important sire. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Into the stretch with a quarter to go. Three quarters, 1:12, and 2/5 seconds. Z Royal just clings on Uncle Walter. Here's Tom's Ready and Mo Tom charging down the center of the track. Pinnacle Peak is fifth, Flannel 16th. It's Tom's Ready and Mo Tom. Tom's Ready and Mo Tom. A GNB Racing 1-2. It's Mo Tom and Corey Lettery. Mo Tom pulled away from Tom's Ready. Uncle Walter third, Dustin fourth, then Z Royal, Pinnacle Peak, Bishop Road, Mending Fences, and Tarpon Bay Road was always outrun.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, back with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. How difficult was it to have that exacta?
Yeah, well, you know, my wife, her late uncle was Tom Walter. So Tom and Uncle Walter was an easy try.
Yeah.
I think it paid like $58 or something.
How come we didn't crush that?
G was happy. Well, right. You know, I don't bet names. I do bet on Tom Amos, though.
By the way, the trainer, Tom Amos, joining us now here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Jude, I always knew your handicapping was really very sophisticated. Now I know for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I loved your horse on Saturday. I thought he was – I think he's really a nice horse. I talked about it earlier before you came on right now, but you always have a horse or two for the Derby, and they you know, look like they're going to be good, but they're really – They're never really a good enough horse, but I think you finally got one now that's really, really nice.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that statement. We've had horses in the past that we've tried to make, you know, maybe they're more middle distance, a little bit more precocious than, say, Mo Tom is, and we've tried to make them something that they're not. In this case, with Mo Tom, he is a horse that likes to lay back and make that big one late run, and you know, that race the other day was a mile and 7 yards, and we're hopeful that he can continue to show that and maybe even look a little more special as the races get longer in distance.
What impressed you most with that victory in the LeCompte the other day, Tom?
I think the thing that impressed me the most was that his finish at a two-turn distance, and I mention that because his last win was the Street Sense, and that was a one-turn mile. But his finish at the two-turn distance was with a sustained run, and the best part of it was the end of it. You know, he looked like he really was drawing off from that group at the end.
And that was a pretty nice group of horses. I mean, that was a decent race that he won. It wasn't just a bunch of schlubs, you know. I was really impressed with it, and he was very professional throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, maybe I should have said that, his professionalism, because that's something that we've been working on. I mean, look, guys, this guy is a May foal. Mo Tom is a May foal, and mentally he shows that. I said going into 2016, meaning this race and whatever races come after it, he would probably make a mistake or two and maybe take a little step backwards before he stepped forward. But I thought he handled himself really, really well in LeCompte and surprised me by his racing maturity.
What's his temperament like? Is he a cool horse to be around or a little difficult? Or?
Well, let me put it in perspective. So the day of the race, as you guys know, Mo Tom is owned by Gail Benson, who is the wife of Saints owner Tom Benson. And so they had a big entourage at the track. And I guess around 1 o'clock with the race running around 5 o'clock, I was starting to feel the pressure a little bit. So rather than be around anybody, I like to be by myself. So I spent a lot of time at the barn. And I walked by his stall twice, and he was sleeping both times, and I thought, oh, my goodness. I mean, please tell me my horse is okay. Please tell me he's right. But he was, of course, and that's him. He is super laid back. You can see that by his running style, and he's laid back in the barn as well. Makes him very, very easy to train for a trainer to train a horse like that.
All right, wait a minute, Tom. You've won more than 3,200 races. You've been to the Derby a few different times. You know about pressure in this game. You still started to feel the pressure the other day when you knew that the ownership group was going to be there?
Maybe not outwardly, but certainly internally, yeah. You know, I mean, these are true New Orleans people. They have a large following. Mr. Benson and Mrs. Benson, for that matter, are not only respected in the community, but they're such they're so generous with their time and their money to the community that, I mean, the world roots for them, and rightfully so. So I didn't want to let anybody down, and you know, yeah, inside I was certainly feeling it.
Right.
Look, I'm going to tell you guys right now. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's like this for everybody, but I can win a $5,000 race. But when that horse comes to the wire, that's the greatest feeling in the world. So when that stuff starts leaving me, you know, feeling the pressure and feeling the excitement of a race, when that leaves me, I think it's time for me to move on to do something else.
Yeah, well, you led me right into my next question. So when he does finally hit the finish line in front, what's that feeling like? Relief? Jubilation? What are you feeling there?
Well, it's hard to describe, but I know if I could bottle it, I could sell it for a lot of money because it's a wonderful feeling. You know, I remember my first win back in 1987. I can tell you her name, Prize Dream, and it was at Sportsman's Park in Chicago, which is now defunct. And I can remember how I felt when that horse won, and it's never changed.
Yeah, there's just something amazing about it, and you know, it's like that for trainers. Trainers remember their first winner. They remember every breeze that their good horses had, and how fast they went to the fifth of a second and the whole nine yards. You talk to jocks. We were talking to some jocks over the weekend in Gulfstream, and they were talking about their love of riding and you know what it means to them, and how excited they get to go to work every day, and that's a feeling that I think a lot of people that aren't in racing don't ever have the opportunity to enjoy.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, Jude. And I mean, to use a word, addictive. It's addictive. You taste it and you want it again.
Talking with trainer Tom Amos on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, when did you first get the sense that this horse could be something special and could really run?
Good question. You know, Mike, at different times horses will tell you something. And so I think one of the statements you hear a lot among the casual observer, but ironically sometimes amongst a seasoned veteran, which I always find laughable, is when somebody says, boy, if they could only talk, speaking of horses, well, they definitely talk, and they've got their own language, and the guys that are good at their job, whether you're a jockey or a trainer, you know, they're fluent in that language. So for Tom, you know, I think the big revelation for me was before he made his first start at Ellis Park, and it was one morning, I put him up against another horse, and I knew his style was more of a kind of a sit-back style, and the races are short in distance at that time, so a lot of the works we're doing are based on agility and also being precocious, which I wouldn't call Tom precocious by any means. Anyhow, so his works had looked rather ordinary to that point, but in working with him, I recognized that he wasn't a horse that wanted to go the early part of a work in a quick fashion, so I designed the work to be something where he laid back and made a finish or attempted to make a finish on the horse he's working against. And it was at Churchill Downs. It was dark, one of the first works of the day, and I was up in the grandstand because at Churchill, as you guys know, it's literally impossible to watch a work from the backside. There's too much construction and things in the infield that block your view of the horse. So I always watch my horses work from up front. And so I had a good view of Tom's last eighth of a mile, this 5/8 mile work. And he just showed me that quickening that was so significant you could see with the naked eye that he quickened. I don't use a watch when I don't time works, but I'm always paying attention with my eyes. I find if I use a watch, I'm paying too much attention to the watch and not enough attention to my horse. But I could see visually that he quickened, and I knew then that he was a nice horse, that maybe I just wasn't allowing him to show it to me in the proper fashion. So that was probably 3 or 4 weeks before he made his first start at Ellis Park.
Yeah, that's a great feeling when you see him get low, huh? They drop down into another gear. Yeah.
Get low. That's well put. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a visit with.
Get low, we're talking about when the horse actually puts his head down and runs to the wire.
We had a visit with jockey Herb McCauley last week at Gulfstream Park, and we got into a conversation with him, and he talked about it from a jockey's perspective, is when you feel them drop down a couple of inches when you ask them to run, then you know that they're there for you. And it sounds like that's exactly what you witnessed as you were watching him work.
I think that's well put, Mike. Yeah, that's definitely one way to put it.
Tom Amos, our special guest here on the Equine Forum. Tom, just a minute or two left here before we do have to get to our next commercial break. But you've been to the Derby on three different occasions, and just kind of curious, what are some of the things that you've learned going down that road before that might help you out when you're planning out this schedule for Mo Tom?
Well, I have the distinction of running last in the Derby, second last in the Derby, and third last in the Derby. the best finish I had was a fifth in the Derby. And in the case of those horses, there were a couple of times where going to the Derby was not really what I thought was in the best interest of the horse. So I'm going to take those experiences out of the equation and look at the other two. And I would say that for somebody that's getting a horse ready for the Derby, one of the worst things you can do is pay too much attention to what the media is saying about your horse. I mean, the focus, of course, is on your horse. But, I mean, you got him there. You trained him to get there. Don't get caught up in how fast this horse is supposed to work or not work or anything like that. And, look, I'm probably a guy that makes you a victim of that because I'm doing the TVG show, The Works, and I'm critiquing those works. And each horse has his own style, so when we're doing that show, we're getting to see a little slice of that horse's training regime, and then we're having to comment on it. And sometimes the comments are not necessarily accurate based on how the horse trains. So you can get caught up in thinking, am I doing this right? You know, you start doubting yourself. But for the older guys, and look, I'm 54, and you guys just learned that my first win was 1987, so I've been doing this a while. I'm able to block that out. I don't care about that. Just worried about my horse and doing what I know is right. The guy's at his best training when he feels he's really communicating with his horses. And it comes and goes, I'll tell you that. So I like to feel like I'm on the same page with my horse.
Well, Tom, it certainly feels as if you are right now. You and Mo Tom are in perfect sync, and I hope it stays that way over the coming months. And I want to wish you all the best moving forward. We'll look forward to catching up with you again soon, but thanks so much for being here this morning.
I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. Thank you so much.
All right, trainer Tom Amos with us here on the Equine Forum. Like all of our guests, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It's the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and you can embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com.
There's a guy that embraces his passion.
How about that?
Tom Amos.
Yeah.
He loves the game. You know, so many of the Nolans trainers, they love the sport, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They do.
Guys like Al Stahl and, well, the late Vinnie Timpani. Nobody loved horse racing more than him.
And we're going to get to another commercial break. We'll get you set for hour number two. But before we do that, I want to remind you that Tonalist, Mr. Speaker, Honor Code, and Liam's Map reinforce the power of Lane's End Stallions. This 2016 roster builds on Lane's End's legacies of AP Indy, King Mambo, and Smart Strike. As the new crop joins the ranks of current standing stallions, Candy Ride, Lemon Drop Kid, Mineshaft, The Factor, Union Rags, Noble Mission, and City Zip, the successful tradition of the 13-time leading stud farm continues, and it continues at Lane's End. You can visit lanesend.com to learn more. We're back to get you set for the second half of the program here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events. I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair Strips. FlairStrips.com.
Introducing the Spendthrift for 2016 Pallas, the multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire and fastest son of leading sire City Zip. Pallas proved to be a leading sprinter in North America in 2014 and 2015, winning such New York staples as the Grade 1 Forgo Stakes,
Grade 1 Vanderbilt Stakes and Grade 2 True North Stakes. Palace is set to retire at season's end to Spendthrift. For more information on Palace, call us toll-free at 888-816-8787. That's 888-816-8787.
Click, order, eat. The new way of ordering Jimmy John's Freaky Fast, Freaky Good Sandwiches is a trend that's sweeping the country. With me tonight to discuss this amazing phenomenon is Ed Stephanopoulos.
Hello.
America's favorite sandwich delivery guy.
That's not entirely true, Bob.
Excuse me?
Technically, all Jimmy John's delivery guys are America's favorite sandwich delivery guys, not just me.
I see. Okay, but we're here tonight to...
Actually, what I just said wasn't entirely true either, Bob. See, some of Jimmy John's delivery guys are actually delivery gals.
All right, so now we...
Or women, or ladies, or females, or persons of the non-male gender.
Ed, could we...
Although I guess that would be a mouthful.
A what?
I mean, if I had to say America's favorite sandwich delivery women or ladies or females or persons of a non-male gender.
Okay, let's say that regardless of whether your Jimmy John's sandwich will be delivered by a guy or a gal...
Or a woman or...
The fact remains that now you can order that sandwich online using Jimmy John's amazing Click Order Eat system.
That's correct, sir.
And what would you say is the basis of that system, Ed?
The what?
The basis, the essence, the sine qua non.
It's Click Order Eat, Bob.
Moving along here, Ed, what would you say has made Click Order Eat so wildly popular?
Well, what do you think, Bob?
It's freaky fast.
Bingo, Bob.
Click Order Eat, Jimmy John's freaky fast new online ordering system.
You sound just like a commercial, sir.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa, direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today.
The ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview Show with Anthony Stabile and Ellis Starr, picking winners.
What do you like in here, Ellis?
This is an Occam's Razor play. Occam's Razor's most obvious thing is going to happen, and it is here, and Mo Tom looks like the real deal.
It's Mo Tom and Corey Battery. Mo Tom pulled away.
The ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview Show, Fridays 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206 and streaming live on horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You know, one of the greatest things about having a smartphone is you can pretty much do anything from anywhere. You can do all your banking from a smartphone, you can make reservations at a restaurant, and even make last-minute travel reservations. Verizon, with their largest 4G LTE network, will help you by making sure you are always connected. Go to Verizon.com or visit your nearest Verizon store for more details. JT, I mentioned at the top of the show, the Kentucky Derby will be less than 100 days away when we come on the air next Saturday morning. But sitting here today on January 23rd, we are just 2 weeks away from the debut of our Saturdays at Gulfstream series. And this coming on the heels of our Saturdays at Saratoga series, which we launched last year. It was highly successful. Listeners in more than 100 countries for that series last year, and a record number of listeners at that. And can't wait to get to Gulfstream Park for the Don Handicap on February 6th to begin 9 consecutive Saturdays of racing coverage from South Florida.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And, of course, Don Day is always a good day. There's several stakes that day, not just the Don. And we'll be bringing you those. It's a very exciting day of racing. And what a fantastic day to kick off that coverage, really. The Don Handicap, a very historic American race.
Yeah, it's going to be tremendous. So many great horses have come through that race. And keep in mind, that's probably going to serve as a prep race for the Dubai World Cup in March for so many of the horses that run in the Don. California Chrome has already departed. He will make one more start before the World Cup. That start will come in Dubai, and then he'll come back and try to win the World Cup again. How cool would that be if he can pull it off after coming so close last year?
Yeah, I mean, his race last year I thought was outstanding. And, you know, by all accounts, he's just training like a freak. So that's very exciting for all the Chromies out there and everybody in the United States who loves California Chrome.
Yeah, not only are you going to hear all of the big races every Saturday afternoon from Gulfstream Park with us exclusively on the Horse Racing Radio Network, we'll also have our coverage of the Dubai World Cup, we'll have our coverage of the Louisiana Derby for you, and we'll have our coverage of the Gotham Stakes as we continue to bring you all of the Road to the Derby races here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Yeah, that's going to be a freakishly good day.
Yeah, it is. It should be tremendous. And you can see a complete schedule at horseracingradio.net. All right, hour number two coming up. John Court kicks it off right after our short break. And then Jonathan Kinchin right around 9:30 Eastern Time. We're back to do it next right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End.
The 37-year wait is over! American Pharoah is finally the one! American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown!
Songbird is just rolling past the eighth pole, has the lead by six. Rachel's Valentina is in second, but there is absolutely no stopping Songbird.
Beholder, once again, is just making this look so easy. It is Beholder in an absolute canter, being geared down late by Gary Stevens. Beholder in a formality.
Stop Charging Maria, short lead. Stellar Wind is fighting on. Stop Charging Maria just keeps battling back. Stop Charging Maria wins the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
And back with hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Pope Jude, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four. You can see all of his selections and get his sheet every week at PopeJude.com. And we welcome everybody back joining us across HRRN Nation on Sirius XM Channel 93, and of course streaming worldwide at HorseRacingRadio.net. Fun first half of the program.
Yeah, very entertaining, if I do say so myself.
Of course, Tom Amos, Bernie Sams from Claiborne, both with us in that first half of the show. And if you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this program and all of our programs that we air throughout the week. All those podcasts available for you to listen at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes.
Absolutely. Download them.
We mentioned that we were going to talk some Kentucky Derby this morning as we edge closer to that first Saturday in May. And we heard from Tom Amos, first half of the program, talking about LeCompte winner Mo Tom. We're going to hear from John Court in just a minute, who won the Smarty Jones Stakes at Oaklawn this past Monday with Discreetness. But we threw out a poll question at the top of the show. We want to invite you to tweet to us at HRRN and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Which three-year-old do you have your eye on at this point? We're sitting here third week of January. Which three-year-old has been the one to catch your eye that you think might be the one on the first Saturday in May? Go ahead and tweet to us at HRN and hit us up on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network. Well, I mentioned John Court being aboard Discreetness, winning the Smarty Jones for his father-in-law, Jinx Fires, this past Monday. A very gutsy win. And John is with us now here on the Equine Forum. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for taking a few minutes. And when I describe it as a gutsy win, am I describing it correctly?
Yeah, I think that's a good description.
What impressed you most about that horse?
I'll tell you, he's just been training forward. He's had talent from the get-go. And we just love the fact that every time I get on him, he just seems to move a step forward, whether it be in the morning training or in the afternoon when he shows up to run.
Put me in the saddle with you, John. Take me through the Smarty Jones and this effort by Discreetness.
Sure. Well, you know, we're coming out of we had the six posts, but that's not exactly I broke out of the five gate. So, anyways, I just was looking for him to lay somewhere mid-pack, and I knew there'd be some speed that would set up in front of us. However, when the Smarty Jones just initial plans didn't unfold like we expected. They actually unfolded better. He broke sharp. He laid up to the front end, lay in third, just leisurely. So I just abided my time. I surely wasn't going to give away what came easy. And then when he straightened for home, I guess what you would call the gutsy, I had to get into him pretty good because he was pretty content running where he was. He was enjoying himself. And when I called on him, the race was, very competitive to the wire. So we had a valiant finish.
You said you didn't want to give up what came easily, and it's funny, we were talking to some riders over the weekend at Gulfstream, and we were discussing the fact that horse racing is a game of real estate. Talk about that and how sometimes if a horse breaks sharply or doesn't break well, how many adjustments you have to make during a race.
Well, exactly. That's the old term. You got to ride it how it comes up. Sometimes when you expect the horse to break sharp, we had an experience like that not too long ago. The horse just broke flat-footed, and he's usually always in front, and I just had to improvise. And unfortunately, the horse never did rally up, but sometimes that's the way it is. And when a horse doesn't break as sharp as you'd like it to, you just have to improvise. And sometimes you try to save ground. Sometimes the horses don't like to be in the inside, and you just got to find a spot where they're going to give you their best effort. So you just have to change strategies just within a matter of fractions of seconds, time to time, going around there.
John, what's it like for a jockey to be in a battle like that down the stretch? You know it's going to be close, and you're asking your horse for everything he has. What's that like for a rider to be in that position?
Well, it's pretty exhilarating, and it's when you win, it's super exciting. Of course, when you lose, you know you gave it your all. You wonder what you could have done to make things different. But when you're battling down the lane there, you're just thinking of how to be a part of that horse and get the best out of him and give your best performance so you guys work together as a team. And that's about it. But it's pretty exhilarating.
Is there a little extra pressure riding for your father-in-law? Does that put a little damper on the dinner table conversation if you don't have a good trip?
Oh, it kind of goes both ways. Actually, the only pressure is when I put pressure on myself. But no, he's probably the greatest to ride for and to work with. And he's very inspiring and educational. So the only time I have a lot of pressure is just the fact that I want to do as good as possibly because he's been really good to me. So I want to just give him the best performance and get the best results that we can possibly get every time we go out there.
Talking with jockey John Cord on the Equine Forum on HRRN. John, a lot of people will have this horse now on the Derby trail, and we know there's a long way between now and the first Saturday in May, but the Smarty Jones was 1 mile on the main track. What's he showing you, or what are you feeling underneath you that gives you the sense that this horse will stretch out and handle the longer distances successfully?
Well, just a combination of things. He's just got a style about him. It's impressive, and his intelligence level, but he's also got the skills and the talent that shows he can run. From the time he started breezing, he just really snapped up to it and just showed that he had the capability of being a good horse. It's just a matter if he can pass the tests, and he's done just that. So when you're on horses, you try to get a basically line on them and judge where you think they'll fit and how far they can go as far as distance and just what spot they fit in. So he was one of them that when you were up in the morning and at the barn ready to get on him, you kind of light on your feet. He's kind of make it easy to get up and head to the barn in the morning just because he brings a lot of pleasure to the game in general.
Is Jinx going to keep him on the Arkansas trail as far as heading towards the Derby?
I would think so. That's the game plan from what I understand. But he calls the shot, so I would think the answer to your question would be yes.
John, you've been to the Derby on a few different occasions. When you do make it to that pinnacle, and let's call it the pinnacle of the sport of thoroughbred racing to be able to compete in the Kentucky Derby, does it make you want to get back there even more now that you've gotten a taste of it?
Yeah, it certainly does. You want to get back there. And I hear from even riders who have won it back-to-back. You know, they just want to continue to build on their career when that opportunity in the iron is hot, you want to strike. But, yeah, that is the top of the pinnacle, like you say, and it's absolutely extraordinary, exciting when you're winning at that caliber and that level of the racing. That's what lures a lot of us in. From when I was a child, I was lured in by the Kentucky Derby, the Triple Crown Series, over a period of time, the Breeders' Cup, and then you've got the World Cup. These things are just exciting, and you love to be able to not only make the dance, but to imagine just making the dance is tough enough. So if you can win it, it's awesome. Incredible.
Yeah, come on. Let's be honest now, John. Aren't riders that have won it back to back in consecutive years being a little bit greedy looking for a third one?
I guess you can call it greed, or it can be just a competitive competitive side of them. Sometimes it's the greed, I would think, is definitely there. There's greed that you have to deal with. But then again, we also love the equine sporting industry that it keeps the passion alive within a lot of us, the most of us, I would think, and believe.
You know, you and I were talking yesterday when I called you and asked you to join us on the program about the quality of racing at Oaklawn this year and how tough that racing is going to be over the next couple of months. Tell me about the meet and tell me about the quality that we're going to see there.
Oh, I tell you, it just gets better every year. You're going to see, as far as quality, you're talking about A-plus racing here. And the talent just continues to grow and gets deeper. It's the competition stiffer. And the fans love it. We got an incredible fan base here. We're one of the few in the country that have an attendance turnout. They do a great job here at Oaklawn. And the racing just stays exciting throughout the meet. So from opening weekend to closing weekend, we have a good attendance and good quality top shelf racing all the way through.
Excellent purses too. The purses are really astronomical this year.
Yeah, that definitely has a strong sense of magnetism.
Now you've gotten off to a great start, John. What's the key to growing your business down there and maintaining that top stature that you've achieved over the years?
Well, I've been here since I had the bug, and I've been around for 35 years, and I just believe in keeping the rapport built strong with my clientele and the horsemen I'm very blessed to ride with, and the open communication. You know, we just have an understanding. They know what I want to do, and what I know what they want to do, and I try to deliver and execute the product they're looking for. So we're having some exciting results and pleasant results when the day is done, and that's our initial goal, and to keep showing up and being available, being consistent.
Well, and John, you've done that for a very long time, and want to wish you all the best at Oaklawn this winter and look forward to catching up with you down the road as well. Safe trip every time you're aboard, my friend, and we'll look forward to catching up soon.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much. You guys have a great day. We'll try to stay warm here.
Yeah, us too. It's freezing.
All right, John Court here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. What a nice guy, huh?
Yeah, he's a great guy. Very handsome, too.
Okay. One of the more underrated riders in the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, he does such a good job, and he's one of those guys that, you know, like when the fancy guys leave town, he goes in there and does his thing. But, you know, he's won a lot of races for Wayne Lucas. Wayne put him on several nice horses.
Yeah, he mentioned that to me when I called him and asked him to come on the program, and you heard me talk about the quality of racing there and how John and I got into that conversation. He also mentioned that he won a race for Wayne Lucas, and he was still really proud to be able to ride horses and to win a race for the old ball coach like that too.
Yeah, well, you know, Wayne's been a big supporter of his for years, and of course Wayne will turn on a jockey on a dime like so many Hall of Fame trainers do.
but he hasn't with John.
No, once in a while he's taken him off a good horse and put somebody a bigger name on, but
didn't John ride? He rode Will Take Charge,
yes,
right?
He did
in the Derby
quite a bit. So but yeah, John's a good rider. He even won a race for me. That's how good he is.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent. And our thanks to John, of course, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and you can embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. Our poll question today, the three-year-old that you have your eye on right now, we want you to tweet to us at HRRN. And Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, and let us know that three-year-old that you're watching sitting here on the third Saturday in January. And I know we're going to get a ton of answers on this, Jude, because there are so many ways to go right now. I think, quite frankly, you take out Nyquist and you take out Mohamed. Other than that, it's pretty wide open.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of horses. If you look at the polls already that are out, Steve Haskins poll, Jeff Siegel,
yep,
has been running 40 horses towards the Derby. That's a big poll. You know, there's horses out there, and everybody's opinion differs a little bit. You see a lot of the same horses at the top of the lists. You know, you always see Nyquist and Mohamed and Greenpoint Crusader. These are horses that are always, you know, towards the top of the list. But there's some other interesting horses that you know, could definitely have an impact that are just getting going. Dale's got that Colt Cherry Wine, who's a really, really nice horse.
Yeah, and he has Brody's Cause too, right?
He's got Brody's Cause too. So
Greenpoint Crusader is still out there, right?
Right.
I mean, Conquest Big E. There's a lot of big name horses that are going to emerge over the coming weeks, and that's what the Derby Trail is all about. It's too early to really start pinning your hopes on one horse unless you're just truly in love with that horse and you think he's a freak, like we saw with American Pharoah last year.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, even American Pharoah, you know, he had the question of, was he going to even make the Derby? Right?
Yep.
He was on the shelf. He had missed the Breeders' Cup, and you know, so there's always question marks, and it just depends on you know, who ticks all the boxes and gets there in one piece. But you know, we've got this horse Discreetness. We've got Mo Tom that we've talked about both of those horses this morning with their connections, and I mean, both of those horses certainly have to be you know, in the top 10, it certainly in the top 20 of Derby contenders at this point.
Yeah, I would certainly have to say so. And that's the nice thing about these polls that we see and where people rank these horses, and nobody knows for sure, but it's a great tool that people can use when they're looking to find that Derby horse. They can go back and they can see where people rank each of these contenders, and great way to do it by keeping in touch with all these Derby polls.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody would benefit from making their own list and updating it every week.
Yeah.
And it's a good habit to get into, to look at these horses, you know, and decide, you know, who do I like, all the pundits like, you know, who is your personal top horse, and if you sit there, you don't need to do 40 of them, but you know, maybe rank the top 10 and for yourself and look at that list every week and go, well, this horse just won. Do I like him better than this particular horse that's on my list? You know, if I was going to bet the Derby today and make a 10 horse, you know, high five box,
right,
which
yeah,
would cost so much money, it would be ridiculous, but who would be those 10 horses that I would use in that box?
Yep.
And if you just keep progressing, by the time the Derby comes up, you'll have a better sense of the horses and how they rank in your mind, and it can help you a lot.
I wonder what that costs. Take 10 horses, box them in an exact five.
Be,
we were looking at
10
those payoffs
times 9
last week.
Times 8 times 7 times 6. Whatever.
Right, somebody do the math, Kutros. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It would be interesting to see. It would be a boatload of money, though. You'd have to really go in large on that. Which, you know, the Kentucky Derby, maybe you get lucky and it pans out for you. But
you
still got half the field, though, that could jump up and beat you,
right,
in one of those top five spots, right? Is there even an exact five on the Derby?
I don't know. I'm sure Churchill Downs would offer it. Why wouldn't they?
It's a cool bet. It's a really cool bet, a very difficult bet. I mean, heck, trying to pick.
So by my calculations, it would be $30,240.
For a buck.
For a buck.
So. Well, let's play it for two and crush it like a McGee.
Well, there you go. All in favor for $60,000.
Wait, there's our pool. We should set up a pool.
With our luck, the chalks would run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in order, and it would pay $15,000, and we would only have a negative loss of $35,000
hit
for
the exact five in the Derby.
$45,000 for the day.
I'm used to doing that, though. Yeah. I'm used to hitting the try and losing money, so you know, I'm known for that.
I know, it's one of your best plays.
All right, getting ready to visit with Jonathan Kinchin coming up in just a few minutes. Jonathan, of course, the winner of the NHC Tour this year, and he has not been handicapping and playing in he's been handicapping. He hasn't been playing in contests for all that long. It's only been a couple of years. So to see him jump up as a rookie on the tour and completely dominate and actually outfinish last year's winner is very impressive.
Yeah, we got to find out how he does it.
We're going to find out his secret here in a few minutes.
Absolutely.
He's not getting off of the program today without giving us his secret to how he does this.
We have ways of making you talk.
All right, it is time now for your Blood Horse News Update and your weekly look at the top headlines from BloodHorse.com. Well, we mentioned this earlier, but California Chrome has departed for Dubai. California Chrome will begin another journey to the other side of the world when he'll depart from his double-wide stall at Los Alamitos Racecourse at 5 a.m. Pacific time with Dubai in his sights. And keep in mind, we're talking about January 21st when he ended up leaving. The 2014 Horse of the Year got in the final two-mile gallop on the morning of January 20th, and assistant trainer Alan Sherman, exercise rider, are you ready for this? I'm going to try and get it right. Dehigi Gladney and groom Raul Rodriguez, that was much easier, departed for the United Arab Emirates later Wednesday afternoon. And Mark Cassie, Catch a Glimpse. They topped the Sovereign Award nominees. Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf winner, Catch a Glimpse, and her trainer, Mark Cassie, are nominated for multiple Sovereign Awards, which will be presented during a ceremony on April 8th. And that is your Blood Horse News Update for this morning. For more industry news and headlines, all you have to do is head over to BloodHorse.com. And don't forget, when you're at BloodHorse.com, to take a look at the new Blood Horse Daily, briefing you on important breeding, racing, and sales news. Sign up to have a PDF emailed to you in a daily newsletter or download the app on your smartphone today. It's bloodhorse.com/daily. And we're going to be back with Jonathan Kitchen here in just a few minutes. He will be joining us to talk about the NHC. We'll do it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Lane Zen.
Cara Conti, from the immediate family of champion sire King Mambo, winner of the Group 1 Grand Criterium at Tui, Cara Conti captured the sire-making French 2000 Guineas. A Breeders' Cup mile winner in 132 and 4/5, Cara Conti posted the highest turf buyer of the year.
Cara Conti with a rush on the outside, goes by him. Cara Conti at Odor. Cara Conti.
Cara Conti. Standing at Gainesway.
And they're off in New York. The premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Grade 1 millionaire Cowboy Cow is leading the third crop sire by two-year-old winners with a dozen juvenile winners already this year. His runners have earned nearly $2 million, and his sire is a greater percentage of winners than nearly any other stallion in his crop, including Pioneer of the Nile. Cowboy Cow, a grand-looking son of Giant's Causeway, standing at Penn Oak Stud.
The fun never ends at Sam Houston Race Park. Saturday, January 30th, don't miss the richest race in Texas with the newly graded $400,000 Grade 3 Houston Ladies Classic. The Houston Racing Festival also features the $200,000 Grade 3 Connolly Turf Cup, Frontier Utilities Turf Sprint, and Space City Stakes with a low 12% takeout. Watch, wager, and win at Sam Houston Race Park. Platinum Partners Bud Light, Sam Houston Race Park. Buy your tickets at shrp.com today.
Come on out to Santa Anita today as older fillies and mares take center stage in the Grade 2 $200,000 Santa Monica Stakes at 7 furlongs. Come early and get signed up for our $40 handicapping contest, and you can compete for $800 in prize money. Santa Anita has the biggest betting pools in the country with $500,000 guaranteed in the late pick four each weekend and $300,000 guaranteed in the late four each weekday. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Every industry has a way to compare quality. The benchmark in the thoroughbred industry has always been Grade 1 winners, and no other active sire in North America has had more success than Giant's Causeway. His Grade 1 supremacy continues with stars like Brody's Cause.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run.
Giant's Causeway, standing at Coolmore America, home of champions.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Inside the final furlong of the Smarty Jones, Gordy Florida, tough dummy inside, and on the outside it's Discreetness. Discreetness and Gordy Florida. Discreetness is in front. Gordy Florida battles on. Discreetness wins.
Three-year-old Discreetness scored impressively in the Smarty Jones Stakes at Oaklawn this past Monday, solidifying his spot on the Kentucky Derby Trail. The son of Darley stallion Discreet Cat earned his second consecutive stakes win, making him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Discreet Cat is the cat that gets the cream. With more black type winners in 2015 than any other stallion standing for under $25,000, Discreet Cat's 2015 winners included 17 individual juvenile winners, three of them at stakes level. Discreet Cat stands value priced for $7,500 at Darley. Learn more by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
Mike Pennett, Jude Feld, back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. Here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, we are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Very busy program so far. If you missed any portion of the show, our interviews with Tom Amos and John Court and even Bernie Sams in the first half of the show, you can go back and listen to the podcast after we finish up at 10 o'clock Eastern. You can do that, horseracingradio.net. And as always, follow all of our programming there, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. All right, we're going to find out what the secret is now, because Jonathan Kinchin has won the 2015 NHC Tour. He'll have an opportunity when he goes to Vegas for the national championships at Treasure Island to earn a $2 million bonus if he can pull off the victory there. And who would bet against him? Because here's a guy that just started playing in tournaments a couple of years ago, and all of a sudden, he's dominating the sport, and he's with us now on the Equine Forum. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you having me. It's been a fun year, that's for sure.
Oh, it's been an amazing year for you. And, you know, we'll hear the term in sports where a person or an athlete is described as a natural. And when I look back on what you've accomplished this year, it seems to me like you're kind of a natural when it comes to playing in these tournaments.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the funny thing about this compared to, like, other sports or competitions is, like, you know, I've been playing horses for a long time. It's just this is the first time it's actually been done in a competitive nature for everyone else to see. And so, it's been good. And, you know, one of my proudest things of the whole year is I've done well in different formats. A lot of guys can kind of get tabbed as being, well, really good live money players or really good mythical $2 win place players or so on and so forth. And I had some success in both of those categories, and as well as some other kind of trickier formats that we've had throughout the year.
What's your favorite format to play in?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm a gambler, so I'm a better. So I like to play. I prefer the live money, but at the same time, I'm not one of those guys. There's a lot of tournament players, unfortunately, that kind of complain a little bit about the $2 win place, because a lot of the strategy that comes into that takes away from the purest form of where we all fell in love with the game. For instance, you know, you're betting a 60-1 shot just because you're out of the tournament and you've got no shot. So you bet the 60-1 shot that you wouldn't bet a dollar on. And so a lot of times guys can get a little bit of a bad taste in their mouth about that portion of it. But it doesn't bother me. I just look at it as a different type of game. It's just a different strategy. I've heard some other guys say it's a different club in the bag. And, you know, I don't play golf, so I really don't know what that means. But But you know what I mean? It's different, but I prefer live money. I'm an aggressive player by nature, so the opportunity to do things that other people might not do in that situation, go all in a certain situation or whatever, it kind of helps my style. So that's what I prefer. But I don't mind either one.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, the NHC Championship is a win place format, correct?
Right, $2 win place, exactly. Yeah, so if I don't like it, I better figure out a way to start liking it.
I've had a lot of experience with contests. I played in the first handicapping contest that Santa Anita ever held. I led the contest. It was a live money contest. I led all the way to the end and got beat in the very last race of the contest when a guy bet the rest of his bankroll on the longest shot of the board at Bay Meadows and won and beat me out by about, $15 or whatever. It was a nightmare. But then I ran contests for Keeneland for many years. I play occasionally online. I'm usually too busy on the weekends with the radio to play much. But do you think anybody will ever invent the perfect format for a contest where not only is it skill and wagering, but it eliminates a lot of the luck factor?
Well, one of the things I've shared with a lot of people, luckily, one of the best parts of this year, and we can maybe transition to that later, but is all the people I've gotten to meet, all the new friends I've gotten racing. And so I've gotten to sit down with, Jim Goodman and Ken Kirchner and Nate Newby and all these guys that are involved in directing all these tournaments. And one of the biggest things that I think could solve a lot of the problems that people complain about is eliminating, or at least to a certain extent, eliminating the leaderboard. Now, there's some negatives to that. Part of the fun of this is seeing your name up there. I mean, that's a lot of fun. It's really cool when you're walking around a room and you're on the top of the board and people know that it's you, and that's fun. That's a fun part of it for us as horse players to experience that we can't really experience anywhere else. That part is cool. But at the same time, if there's a way in which we can hide, not make the target as obvious, I think that it would be something that – we could benefit from and kind of maybe eliminate some of that negative aspect that people have, your bad beat story. My best friend in the world started playing tournaments, kind of late in the year this year watching me play. And he was at Surfside and playing in a tournament on the lead for an NHC seat. Luckily, he held on and got a seat, but someone bet $100 on a 17-1 shot. And look, I don't know, the guy might have loved the horse. I'm not trying to take that away from him. But it so happened that 17-1 was just enough to put him in front. So without a leaderboard, that doesn't really happen. You don't ever know exactly where you're at. I know the tournament in South Dakota, they have the Players' Challenge. I think for the last three races, they take the leaderboard down. So, that's pretty cool. You never really know. The win in Las Vegas, they don't ever have a leaderboard until the end of day one and then the end of day two. So that's. I think that could probably help a little bit with that problem you're kind of describing.
Jonathan Kinchin, the native of Austin, Texas, joining us here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, he won the 2015 NHC Tour, and he will have an opportunity at a $2 million bonus when he competes in the National Handicapping Championship later this month in Las Vegas. Jonathan, what first attracted you to the sport of thoroughbred racing and to playing races?
I grew up in Dallas-Fort Worth. My dad, he's actually just recovering from surgery. He might be listening to this, so, God bless him after I bash him. He's the worst handicapper in the world. He's that guy in front of you in line that when you're trying to get your well-handicapped pick four in, he's leaning back, looking at the screen to find the shortest minutes to post to put it in exact the box on numbers. He has no idea who they are. And so I used to go with him all the time, and I used to see him get frustrated, and he's losing money and blah, 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 blah. But we enjoyed going there, and I used to see all these people with, papers and computers and stuff. And so I was like, well, look, if I'm going to go with my dad and he's going to hand me $50 to bet, at least I'm going to try to figure it out a little bit. Kind of fell in love with it slowly. And then when I was in college, the real moment that put me over the edge was I went to Austin, University of Texas, and they used to have a little racetrack called Maynard Downs that closed down. I went to Maynard Downs with $100, hard earned college $100. And I bet a whole bunch of exacta boxes and try boxes with a Fleet Alex and blah, 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 and blah, blah. And I remember my dad's friend telling me he liked Giacomo. So I was like, well, I'll just bet five across the board on Giacomo, no big deal. We go back to a friend's house. We're drinking from the keg, and I just won $500. I'm like the richest man in the world. And from that point on, I think I was on Amazon that night ordering Steve Davidowitz's book, Buyer on Speed, and it was all downhill from there. We went to our first derby in 2008, and we haven't missed it since. So it's kind of where my love started and has kind of got me to where I am now.
So why start playing in contests?
Well, really, there's a couple of reasons. One is because, you know, this game creates a little bit of competitiveness in us based on the fact that it's a pari-mutuel game where we're playing against the people you're standing next to at the racetrack. So I always kind of enjoyed that part of it. I'm really grossly competitive. I watched the horse player show and said, oh, that's kind of cool. That would be fun to try to interact with some of those guys. And I wonder if I'm as good as them because they seem like they're really good. But we seem like we're talking about the same things. And then the thing that put me over the edge was I live in Texas, and they took away our ADW access. And so on a Saturday, if I wanted to get down, I wanted to get any action, I'd have to drive to San Antonio an hour to play the pick four. And then, you know, if I win, then I got to drive back because I don't want to hang out there all day because it's, you know, it's just far and whatever. I like to have an adult beverage, and I don't want to drive back. So I heard Pete Fornatel from the DRF, who wrote the Winning Contest Player book. I heard him talking on Steve Bick's radio show, and I just was like, well, I might try that. My first time, I qualified for the BCBC, and then I started trying to qualify for the NHC, and I qualified. I got two entries to the NHC, and you know, the rest is kind of history.
What's your style of handicapping? Speed, class? How do you go about looking at races?
My style is to continue to get better and to continue to adjust and continue to add things. So to answer your question, and I'm not trying to be coy, like everything, I pace, replays, class, trip, workouts, you know, kind of dissect the story, you know, understanding, well, this horse was supposed to be here, but he didn't go here, and now he's here, and then this jock shows up here because that jock was there. Like, just the whole thing, it takes me way too long to handicap a race, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it's a little bit of everything. I guess if I had to pick one thing, it would be that, in my opinion, horses that are on the front win more often than horses that are coming from off of it because they got a lot less to overcome. But for the most part, I incorporate as much as I possibly can. I think, you know, some of the younger generation, not that I'm not even that young, I mean, I'm 33, but I think because of the computer age that we grew up in, my mind isn't distracted by having 17 things thrown at it. I can just kind of take them all in and try to process it a little bit. You know, I know a lot of the older guys in our game, they just like to keep it the way they've always done it. And when new information comes in, it kind of throws them off. And I think some of us younger guys are kind of the opposite.
Jude and I were talking earlier, Jonathan, and we said that we were not going to let you off the air today until you told us exactly how you do it. So we have about 25 minutes left in the show. We're happy to bypass any commercial breaks that we have left. If you take us step by step as to how you win all these contests and how you handicap a horse race.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess the basic approach that I do, and I learned this, actually, man, like I said, I just added it probably like within a year, is I don't handicap the race by post position. Like, you know, most guys will get the PPs and they'll just go, okay, here's the first horse, there's the second horse, there's the third horse. I will go through and I'll kind of decide who I think is going to be forwardly placed, and I'll handicap all the horses that are forward. I'll handicap all the horses that are in the middle, and I'll handicap the horses that are coming from behind. And I handicap it in that order because I feel like it tells a better story rather than just kind of jumping around. Because how often do you find that you love the rail horse, and then you've exhausted your mind and your opinion by the time you get to the 14, that you kind of discount the 14's chances because you already fell in love with the one. You're already dreaming on your ticket already being built and all that stuff. So that's one thing that I've done that I think works out well. The other thing is, and I think I got this from someone's book, I don't remember who, but I start at the bottom of the page on the PPs and then work my way up. And I mentally in my mind tell the story. Like, I literally will say, like, okay, debuted in a maiden special weight, you know, it was 4-1 that day, got money for, you know, unknown trainer, they must have had some good workouts or something, the horse must be well met. ran on the slop, tried to stretch him out, cut back, you know, then got a break, then switched to turf. So I tell the story all the way up until I get to the race that we're at, and you have a much better understanding of why that horse is where that horse is and what to expect from him moving forward. I would say that's, and then after I, you know, so I do that, and then I go through and I watch any replays that I think are necessary. Watch, you know, is whatever I can come up with that, you know, if I need to watch two back or three back or whatever. I try not to watch races that are way too far back, but, and then I'll just go through and I'll watch that replay. If it's necessary, which I think it's one of the most underrated things in racing, is watching the head on replay. I think you get a lot better of a story from the head on than you do from the pan. Sometimes it's hard to tell where horses are, obviously, in the head on, but you can see jockeys' hands and stuff like that. So I've actually started incorporating the head on like in the last like 3 or 4 months. It's actually kind of new to what I've been doing, but I find it to be pretty helpful. So I'll do that, watch the replays. Obviously, you'll come, when you're telling that story, you'll see some things that might require you to dive into Formulator and to dig up some trainer stats. You'll see, you know, like I was talking about, the horse is cutting back today. Well, how does the trainer do with that? Is the trainer trying to set the horse up? Is the trainer an idiot? Is the trainer giving up? Is the trainer, you know, what is it? And then you will hop to the Formulator stats, and you see that he's 1 for 74 trying to cut a horse back on dirt. And I'm just like, okay, well, that's then I know that this move is not a well-meant move, and I can move on to the next one. And then I try, once I kind of do that for all the horses, then I just try to tell a quick story of how the race is going to unfold. And that usually that story will start from the far outside horse to the rail horse, and try to say to myself, like, well, does the rail horse have to send? Because I think that's when you usually get pace situations, when there's a fast horse drawn inside and outside, because they're both going to go forward to try to avoid those negative positions. And so, and then I just try to figure it out from there. And trying to think what else. That's pretty much, I mean, that's the basis of what I do. Obviously, the other thing that I find to be very useful in whatever format you use of handicapping, if you're an old school guy, you know, go to Office Depot and grab a notebook. If you're a new school guy, put it in your Formulator or, you know, your time form or whatever it is that you use. But taking notes after you watch races, to me, has resulted in some of my biggest scores of the year. You know, I loved Divisadero on our Divisadero, whatever I call it, Divisadero, but on Derby Day, and it was all off of just seeing him have two bad trips in a row at Gulfstream and having that note and putting him in my stable alert. And then the best day that I've had ever was centered around a note that at the time that I took to take a note of a race that I had already watched. So that's pretty much it. And then after you do all of that, I think the next thing and the most important thing that we sometimes forget about is how you bet the race. Your ticket, you know, your ticket construction, whether you're going to play multi-race bets or, you know, you're going to bet tries or exactly you're going to play it in the race, you're going to bet the horse to win, so on and so forth. That's kind of my workflow. It's usually a lot longer than it even sounds like it is.
Well, that sounds easy enough.
Well, I'll tell you,
that whole process.
I'm sitting here looking like a bobblehead, shaking my head, because everything you said is just so freaking accurate. I cannot tell you how impressed I am. I mean, the just from the beginning of looking at the race from a different perspective, and then handicapping from the bottom up is something that I espouse and I encourage people to do, because I think you're so right about telling that story. You can almost figure out what the horse is going to do by starting at the bottom. And that's really, you know, how the past performances are constructed. I mean, you can really see what the trainer's doing and thinking, and, you know, the switches, the dirt to turf, the shortening up, the stretching out, all of those things, and just very impressive. And I am, after listening to you talk about your handicapping process, I am not the least bit shocked that you are not all world in contests. That's just phenomenal, really.
Right, you know, I tell like my friends and stuff, and you know, that are involved in racing as well. Like, I work hard. My buddy Nick Tamaro is similar. He's the same way I am. I mean, it's not like we just show up and, you know, look at it the morning of. And, you know, I'm for the NHC, I'm already done with Fairgrounds for Thursday. It came out early. I'm done with it. So you know, for next Thursday. So it's like it's the work. If you do all the work, it becomes a little bit of an easier game. If you just show up on the fly, it's tough to beat takeout and then beat these other players.
Do you find that your victories come on days when your style of handicapping is working? I mean, or can you like scramble on a day where things aren't really going your way?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That's actually a funny story. We talked about that. It's like there's been days where I'm like, I can't be more prepared, and I just do awful. There's days where I can't be more prepared, and it's like the greatest day ever, like Derby Day. I was more prepared Derby Day than I've ever been Derby Day, and I finally had a winning Derby Day. But then there's days where, like, I just, like, literally will have had too much fun the night before, wake up, barely making it in, hair of the dog, throw it together, and do well. But I think the thing about that is the way that the reason that works is because the basic principles in which we use to handicap, the fundamentals that we use are such strong fundamentals that we built our games around that it can sometimes get you by even when you're not ready. Now, don't get me wrong. I would prefer to be prepared. But there's certain things that you still can just, you know, figure out. You know, you're skipping races where there's a 4-to-5 shot that you love, or you're singling the horse and developing value somewhere else. And so, but don't get me wrong, I bomb away too on days I'm not prepared. So,
Jonathan, only about 30 seconds or so left before we have to get to a commercial break. But any plans on what you might do with that $2 million bonus if you end up winning?
No, I mean, the biggest thing that I know I'm going to do for sure, if I can win that money, is I'm going to make I don't know how much money yet. I've had too many. I haven't decided exactly, but I'm going to make a nice little donation to old friends, and then also, and I'm not sure exactly which charity, but something that's going to help with the workers on the backside, something that kind of make their lives a little bit better, the lives of their families a little bit better. Obviously, it won't be the most money in the world, but something that could help a couple families out. I know those are two things for sure that I'll do. And there's no doubt that the craps table would be a little bit raucous on Saturday night.
I can relate to that. And just for the record, the Horse Racing Radio Network Foundation is an unbelievable charity.
There it is.
All right, Jonathan, we appreciate it, my friend. All the best, and good luck out there in Vegas, and go get them.
Thanks. I appreciate it, guys.
All right, and Jonathan Kinchin, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle that is as classy and alluring as the game itself. Embrace your passion by visiting embracetherace.com. Sharp guy.
Very sharp. Very, very sharp.
You think he embraces the passion of horse racing?
Well, you can tell by talking to him.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's an old guy. He's 33.
Yeah, right. Damn kids. Good stuff. All right, good luck to Jonathan, and we'll wish him all the best in the NHC Championships at Treasure Island. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We will come back and get ready to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum. But before we do, we'll talk about that road to the Kentucky Derby. It's all here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwiches, Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What do we do?
Leave it to me, sir. Hello, boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Roger.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later. Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Jock Talk. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
Rosina Pravnik, welcome to the show. Not only did you have 110 wins, but you were also the first woman jockey to win the Louisiana Derby and the first woman rider to win the leading rider title. How did that feel to accomplish that?
That was really, I mean, it was unreal. To win the Louisiana Derby, you know, it was my first $1 million race. I was shocked when they asked me to, you know, ride in the Derby, in the Kentucky Derby. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to me. It was all, I mean, that whole winter, that meet, the, you know, the Louisiana Derby, the Kentucky Derby, it was all whirlwind. I mean, it was all like, my life is starting now, and it was amazing.
Jock Talk, every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 XM 206 and streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy John's.
Zulu takes the lead on the outside, having gone by Pilot House, but Avast Mating is right in contention and is now moving up into second as they come toward the top of the stretch. And now John Velasquez asking more from Zulu as they turn for home. Avast Mating on the outside tries to run with him. Then comes Prospectus, who's gaining ground in between horses. Zulu kicks away, and kicks away suddenly here to a five-length lead, leaving the others reeling behind. Oh, Zulu finishing strong and wins again. Zulu by about seven in the end. Tight second, maybe Prospectus, over Avast Mating in a photo, then Nygon's Edge and Brighton Lane.
Larry Colmus with the call of that very, very impressive allowance win by the Todd Pletcher-trained Zulu last week at Gulfstream Park. Of course, Jude and I were there. We had a chance to see that performance in person, and it was every bit as impressive in person as it looked on television as well. And Jude, Zulu, a horse that a lot of people are going to be putting high on their Derby list at this point.
Yeah, I moved him up to third on
Ooh,
my list.
That far up.
I liked his first race. I saw him run the first time, and I was kind of reserving opinion until he ran the second time. Now, the one knock on him, both of his races have been on off tracks, so it could be possible that he's an off-track specialist, but I don't think that's the case. I think he's got a beautiful stride. I think he's a very, very good horse. They paid $900,000 for him, so you know he's got the pedigree and the looks, so... I think he's one of the ones that we really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, and of course, all these young horses will have to start answering the two-turn question, and distance will become a topic of discussion with many of the horses that are on most people's Derby list. But when you take a look at that pedigree that you just mentioned of Zulu, he is the son of Bernardini, so no problem there. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's out of a Pleasant Colony mare?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, Summer Squall. He's out of a Summer Squall mare.
That's right.
Which, again, no problem with distance there. So from a pedigree perspective, he should only continue to excel as the distances get longer.
Yeah, well, you know, people don't usually spend $900,000 on a horse that doesn't have a distance pedigree. He's really captured me. I have been super impressed with both of his races.
Now we're going to talk more about some of the main players on the road to the Kentucky Derby. We'll update you on the latest workout by Mohamed. He worked this past Thursday morning. We'll update you on that workout as he points for the Holy Bull Stakes for his 3-year-old debut. That'll come at Gulfstream Park next week. Tonalist, Mr. Speaker, Honor Code, and Liam's Map reinforce the power of Lane's End Stallions. The 2016 roster builds on Lane's End's legacies, AP Indy, King Mambo, and Smart Strike. And as the new crop joins the ranks of current standing stallions Candy Ride, Lemon Drop Kid, Mineshaft, The Factor, Union Rags, Noble Mission, and City Zip, well, the successful tradition of the 13-time leading stud farm continues. And it all continues at Lane's End. You can visit lanesend.com to learn more. All right, I mentioned Mohamed, Jude, in the workout this past Thursday, and of course in the hands of trainer Kieran McLaughlin, who is going to be looking to finally get over the hump and pull off that win in the Kentucky Derby. And Mohamed, a lot of people thinking he might be the one. The work was performed under regular exercise rider Miguel Hamey. The sophomore Tappet Colt sailed through 5 furlongs in 59 1/5 seconds over the main track at Palm Meadows. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. He's a very nice horse. He's on top of my list. Another horse that I've been very impressed with. He's very professional. Not the biggest horse in the world, but he's got a big heart and a lot of talent. So I'm looking for some good things from him.
Well, here's what Kieran had to say afterwards. He said he worked great and he continues to do well. Then he was quoted as saying that this was a really nice work. We're a little more than a week away and we're all excited. I wanted him to go a half mile in 48 and he went in 47. It was a little quicker, but he is just doing so well. He did it all on his own and he doesn't blow it all coming back. He cools out so quick. We're all set, all systems to go.
That's it. You love it when it's all systems go.
Yeah.
That's a way to do it. But, yeah, I've got him on top. Nyquist, of course, who's going to run in the San Vicente, I believe. 7-furlong race. That'll kick off his year. Zulu, third. Conquest, Big E. Him and Greenpoint Crusader, I have them relatively close. Conquest, Big E was highly touted going into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He was training like a bomb. And, he didn't get the best of trips. He had kind of an off day. But he's been training unbelievably ever since.
You remember Cassie telling us on one of our Breeders' Cup Countdown shows that he is so high on this horse that you're going to hear a lot from this horse up the road. Maybe this is the year, that it'd have to be the year that everything comes to fruition for Conquest Big E.
Well, I'm a sucker for a story, as you know, so I really started embracing the Conquest Big E story, and I'm still embracing it.
Yeah. Why not?
Can't teach an old dog new tricks, but, he's a very nice horse. He's a good-looking horse. Greenpoint Crusader, this is a horse that the Uber capper, Ellis Starr, has been high on for a while. Dominic Schettino trains him, and he's doing well. My next horse, More Spirit, of Bob Baffert's, probably Bob Baffert's best chance at the Derby, although he's got a few others. Mo Tom, who we talked to Tom Amos earlier, is 7th. I have Arrow Force, another Cassie, 8th. Tom's Ready, who ran a very good race, by the way, and is owned by the same owner as More Tom. Dallas Stewart trains Tom's Ready, and that horse ran very well.
Yeah.
So Discreetness, Let's Meet in Rio, Bob Baffert's Judmont colt that ran 2nd to Collected the other day. And he ran a kind of an odd race, but when Kent asked him at the top of the lane, he really showed a little bit of turn of foot. I talked earlier in the show about Cherry Wine for Dale Romans.
Did you mention Brody's Cause?
He's on the list. Yeah. I've got him in 16th right now.
Pointing for the Tampa Bay Derby, by the way.
Yeah, that might be a good spot for him. I don't know. He disappointed a lot of people in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but we'll see what happens there. But it's a great list. There's a lot of nice horses. Baffert's got Dre Fong, who looked like he was going to be something kind of special. Pletcher had a horse named Destin that ran against Mo Tom the other day, ran 4th.
Yeah.
He could develop into something. There was a horse that ran at Laurel named Henry the King, who's bred to go along. He finished 3rd in the stakes the other day. He's kind of a fuzzy. He could develop into something possibly. Lots of interesting horses. And we just have to see how good they get. You know, some of them are going to be better than others, and some of them are going to fall by the wayside. But it's an interesting Derby season this year. Probably the most fascinating, I think, for quite a while.
Well, all the questions are going to be answered in just 105 days, 3 hours, 35 minutes, and wait for it, 10 seconds.
It's that 10 seconds gets you every time.
Every single time. All right, we want to thank all of our special guests for being with us this morning here on the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. Of course, we kicked it off with Bernie Sams from Claiborne. Tom Amos was here as well, John Court, and Jonathan Kinchin. Very busy show, my friend. Of course, if people missed it, they can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast, as always.
Yeah, it's a great way to listen while you're running or working out or doing yard work or whatever
it might be.
Yeah.
All right. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, I am, of course, Mike Penna. And yes, nothing good comes of deviation, so what the hell? Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.